News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
As you will be aware, O.J. Simpson, the former American football star and Hollywood actor who was cleared of murdering his ex-wife and her friend in a very high-profile criminal trial, passed away yesterday. A little earlier, I caught up with one of his dream team, as they were known, lawyers, the high-profile Alan Dertsovich. I began by asking him his reaction to the news of Simpson's death.
I'm saddened by his death. He will always have a mixed legacy. Many people think he was guilty. As his lawyer, I can't comment on that. I can only say that the police believed he was guilty, and then they tried to frame him by enhancing the evidence. They created a bloody sock by pouring the blood of O.J. Simpson and his alleged victim from a test tube onto the sock, making it seem as if the sock had gotten the blood at the crime scene. We were able to prove, however, that the blood had a chemical, EDTA, which is not found in the human body, but is used to prevent coagulation in test tubes. And by that scientific evidence and blood splatter, we were able to prove that the police concocted, created a piece of evidence. The jury believed that. And as the result, they had reasonable doubt about the rest of the evidence.
There was another key moment, and maybe you might just tell our younger listeners who weren't around for the case, where O.J. Simpson tried on the glove, and the glove famously didn't fit, which prompted the defense line, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, I was actually in the courtroom just 2 or 3 feet away from O.J. Simpson when he tried on the glove and showed it to the jurors and said to them, "It's too small." So in effect, he testified, and I was able to persuade him not to take the witness stand to be subject to cross-examination because he had already had his say. The prosecution made a terrible blunder. They could have had him try on the glove outside the hearing of the jury first to see if it fit, but they were so arrogant they didn't do that, and they did it in front of the jury, and it absolutely backfired, and it became an important moment in the case. And there I was, 2 feet away from the jury, watching them as O.J. Simpson showed that the glove didn't fit. Now, the reason the glove didn't fit may very well have been that he was wearing a latex glove underneath it, and which he was allowed to do, and also because it was in a refrigerator and may have shrunk. But that was the prosecutor's fault for trying it on him in front of the jury instead of trying it on outside the presence of the jury.
Again, it's hard to overstate just how much this case gripped not just America, but the entire world. And at midday that day, LA time, the whole world basically tuned in to hear that verdict. I think the president of the day, I think it was Bill Clinton, famously watched it, went into his secretary's office to watch the verdict. I think I read an interview with you before where you said you watched it with your students. You were back in Harvard, I think, at the time.
I was. It was the day of Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, and I didn't want to fly out for the verdict. So I watched it with my students, and many of the students were surprised. Some expected a hung jury, some expected guilty, few expected an innocence verdict. I actually discussed the moment with Bill Clinton some years later, and he too was very surprised at the verdict. Remember, the verdict really reflected the deep divisions, racial divisions in America. Many African Americans were pleased with the verdict, and many whites were displeased with the verdict, and they saw the evidence differently. Many African Americans focused on the police misconduct, which they had experienced personally. Others focused on the abuse against women, which they had experienced personally. So it was a Rorschach test for many viewers, and it reflected divisions in America, divisions that have only gotten worse over time. Now we have the same divisions, obviously, over partisan politics. I was condemned for defending O.J. Simpson, and I was condemned even more for defending Donald Trump in front of the Senate, even though I obviously don't support Donald Trump politically, but I was his lawyer. And people just misunderstand the role of lawyers in a system like the British, the Irish, and the American system.
Absolutely. You were simply doing your job. You spoke about how you had advised O.J. Simpson successfully not to take the stand. You also advised him after the case to, you know, keep a low profile. I think it's fair to say he didn't do that.
He did not. I had advised Klaus von Bülow after I helped win his case and he got an acquittal. I advised him to go leave the country, go to Great Britain, live his life, go to the opera, but don't be in the public light. And he did. And he lived a wonderful life, died a year or two ago. He accepted my advice. O.J. Simpson did not. And every time he appeared in the media, it hurt him. And I think it may have contributed to the decision to bring charges against him for stealing his own memorabilia back. That case was really payback. People thought he had gotten away with murder and he wouldn't get away with stealing these materials. And so they sentenced him to an excessive term. Usually people get a year or two for that kind of alleged crime. But the judge wanted to give him payback.
He also wrote an ill-considered, I think most people would say, a very ill-considered book, If I Did It, Confessions of a Killer.
Not only that, but when the book appeared, the if was in small print and I did it was in big print. It was the most idiotic thing I've ever seen. I've had idiotic clients over the years, many, many of them. I probably had, 300 people, including 30 people who were charged with homicide, most of whom I got acquitted. But I've never seen anybody sue anything as stupid as writing that book. That really takes the cake.
The case was, your legal team was referred to as the dream team. The case was referred to as the trial of the century. And in showbiz terms, if I can use that awful phrase, given the seriousness of the crime, it certainly was. But it was also an important case for other legal reasons, wasn't it?
Well, I think mostly for revealing the corruption of some police officers. I think it taught a generation of lawyers that they have to know science if they're going to win the case. We won the case because we knew the science better than they did, and we made fewer mistakes. And so I think it did have a big impact on educating lawyers. It had a big impact on juries, too, because juries were saying, well, where's the blood evidence? Where's the DNA? Where's, they expected the same quality and quantity of evidence that existed in the O.J. Simpson case. So it had a big impact. But, it was not the trial of the century. We were not the dream team. We were a group of lawyers who worked very hard. And it was an important case. But, compared to some other cases in the 20th century, the Rosenberg case where they were executed, the Vanzetti case where they were executed, the Pentagon Papers case, this was an important case, but not the most important one.
He was subsequently found guilty in a civil trial. I know the burden of proof is much lower in that. Would you have had much contact with him after the trial? I know your relationship was more professional, was entirely professional. Would you have met him over the years?
Well, he called me quite a bit and asked me legal advice. I don't think the burden of proof is what explained the second verdict. I think the fact that he testified explained it, and he had to. It's a civil case, and he was a terrible witness, and the jury looked at him and they said they didn't believe him, and that was why I was so adamant about him not testifying at the first trial. I was not his friend. I was just I had a relationship with him the way a doctor would have a relationship with a patient. I cared for his welfare and I wished him well, but he didn't take my advice subsequent to the case, and so I bear no responsibility for his writing the book or doing other foolish things that he did.
Just finally, were you aware of his declining health? Had you seen him in recent years at all?
I hadn't seen him, but I had learned through mutual friends that he was very sick with cancer and that he was in hospice care and that it was expected he would not live. But it's always shocking when somebody dies. And so I was saddened by his death.
Very finally, you mentioned the Klaus von Bülow case, which of course was made very famous by a movie for which Jeremy Irons won Best Oscar, and you successfully represented him. Where does the O.J. You had an extraordinary career. Where does the O.J. Simpson case, where does it rank in terms of your career? I suppose your career highlights.
Probably in the middle somewhere. The von Bülow case, the Pentagon Papers case, the Donald Trump defense in front of the Senate, they're all highlights. It's like asking a parent who their favorite or asking me what my favorite book is. I wrote 55 books and I can't pick a favorite of my 55 books. And it's hard for me to figure out which is the most important of the cases I did. I've been blessed with a good career, but a controversial career. Friends don't talk to me. Relatives don't talk to me as the result of me representing Donald Trump. I didn't have that in the OJ case. People were critical of me, not for taking the case, but for winning the case. The OJ Simpson case caused a lot of controversy, but not nearly as much as the Donald Trump case. And for understandable reasons, Trump's running to be president, and it could affect the future of the world. Whereas O.J. Simpson was just a football player who may or may not have committed terrible crimes.
And that was Alan Dertsovich, O.J. Simpson's defense lawyer back in 1994.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.